Okay, good morning, everybody. Outside, it looks like a pretty dreary day today, but tomorrow is a very happy day on the Jewish calendar. Tomorrow, of course, is Tu B'Av. So I figured we'd talk a little bit about Tu B'Av. I'm surprised in all the years I never had a Temin Halacha Shir on Tu B'Av, probably because it's always in between Keli and when I actually start yeshiva, so I have no one to talk to. So now we're actually here, and it's Tu B'Av tomorrow. So what happened on Tu B'Av? Two things. First of all, what happened on Tu B'Av? Second of all, what are the halachic implications of it? Are there any halachic ramifications of it being Tu B'Av? So the first things first, there are six events that happened on Tu B'Av that are worthy of celebration, and they are identified by the Gemara in two places in Shas. The Gemara in Maseches Tainis, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, and Maseches Bava Basra, Daf Kufchaf Aleph Amud Aleph, going over to Kufchaf Aleph Amud Beis. And the way they would celebrate these six things is they would have the Benos Yisrael go out in borrowed white clothing, Dafka borrowed clothing, Shel Levayish Es Misha Ein Lo, and they would go find the Shidduch, and they would that would be a day where we were Mezaveg Zivugim in Klal Yisrael. So what are the events that we're celebrating and we want to mark by having a day of Shiduchim and a day of arranging for future Jewish families to be created? So it's six things. First thing is that where was I over here? Six things. Before we get to the six things, the Ritva points out that in Sukkah Daf Nun Aleph, the Gemara says, "Mishalara Simchas Beisashueva Lo Ra'a Simcha Miyamav," which sounds like there is no Yom Tovim LiYisrael like the Simchas Beisashueva. So how come the Gemara says that there Lo Hay Yom Tovim LiYisrael Ketuba Av Kiyom Kippurim? It seems like Simchas Beisashueva was better than Tuba Av and Yom Kippurim. And the Ritva answers that Simchas Beisashueva was limited to the Mikdash and those in the vicinity. But Tu B'Av and Yom HaKippurim are joyous days, are days of Simcha for all of Klal Yisrael, wherever we may be. And therefore, it has a greater sense of Simcha associated with it than even the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, which was a more limited Simcha to that particular location. The Eshel Avram points out that the link between Tu B'Av and Yom HaKippurim is that they both relate to a sense of Shalom and Achdus. We need to be Meratze Es Chaveru on Yom HaKippurim in order to achieve kapara, and Tu B'Av allowed the Shvatim to marry each other, as we'll soon see. So both relates to a sense of coming together of Klal Yisrael. So what are the six things that happened on Tu B'Av? So first things first. Number one, the Shvatim were allowed to marry into each other. It used to be that in the Dor HaMidbar, they made a takana that the Shvatim were not allowed to marry out because we were afraid that a daughter would receive the Nachla of her father from her Shevet, and then she would marry a man from a different Shevet, and she would bring that Nachla out into the other Shevet. So the Shevet that she originally came from would lose out on that Nachla. So on Tu B'Av, they decided that we're going to do away with, not they decided, but on Tu B'Av, we did away with that decree. The Isser fell away, because once the Dar HaNechnasim La'aretz died, the original generation of those who came to Yisrael and received the Nachla died, so then the Isser fell away. Why would we celebrate this? So it was good for one Shevet to add to his Nachla, meaning as sad as it is for the Shevet that's losing, the Shevet that was gaining, it was good for them. So whatever's bad for one is good for the other one. So why is this worthy of celebration? So the Marsha points out, no, the point is not about the transference of money, it's what it meant. Because they had this decision that they weren't going to marry out of the Shevet, it meant that women were very limited in who they can marry. A man can marry a girl from any Shevet, but a woman is going to be, who received the Nachla, is going to be very, very limited in who she can marry. And now, for women, it's going to be much, much easier in Shiduchim when they have the pick of any of the Shvatim. They don't have to stay within their own Shevet. So that's the first thing. Second thing that happened is Yom Shehuter Shevet Binyamin Lavo Bakahal. In the aftermath of the story of Pilegesh Begiva, in the end of Sefer Shoftim, where all those wild stories happen at the end of Sefer Shoftim, so probably no story wilder than the story of Pilegesh Begiva, they wouldn't marry anyone from Binyamin. But the Isser was Mimenu Velomi Banenu. The Isser to marry anyone from Binyamin was only from that original generation, but their offspring, the future generations, were allowed to marry from Binyamin. So Ritva points out that they needed Dafka of Pasuk in order to impose this Isser, because it was meant to be a binding Isser on the entire community. But from that Pasuk, we derive Velomi Banenu. So that also, that it was the day on Tu B'Av that it was declared that now people are allowed to marry people from Shevet Binyamin, and this is why these two issues of Shiduchim, this is why the method we choose to celebrate is in Shiduchim, is in having the young men and the young women meet each other on Tu B'Av. A third thing that happened is Yom Shekalubo Mesei Midbar. It was the day that the people in the Midbar stopped dying. And with that came the Shekhinah speaking directly to Moshe Rabbeinu once again. The Rashbam in Bava Basra brings a medrash, that a very famous medrash, that they would dig their graves every year on Erev Tisha B'Av. Everyone would go to sleep in their graves on Tisha B'Av night, and 1/40th of the people wouldn't wake up the next morning. And they would say, Yibadu Achayim min Amesim. They would just announce, whoever's alive, get up. And every year, 1/40th of the community just didn't get up. So the last year, the 40th year in the Midbar, everyone dug their graves, and they went to sleep, and they said, and everyone got up. Everyone was alive. So they couldn't believe it. They thought maybe they were off on the day. Maybe it wasn't really Tisha B'Av. So they tried again the next night, and the next night, and the next night. And people kept on getting up. They kept on living through the night until they saw on Tu B'Av, the moon was full already. It was obviously way past Tisha B'Av. And they realized that the Gezerah was over, and therefore it was the cause of celebration on Tu B'Av. Tosfos raises a lot of problems with this medrash. Tosfos points out, then why didn't the Shekhinah talk to Moshe Rabbeinu right away? Meaning, once the Mesei Midbar finished dying, so the Shekhinah came back to talk to Moshe Rabbeinu. But we may not have realized that it was already over, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew it was already over, so why didn't the Shekhinah talk to Moshe Rabbeinu right away? So Tosfos says, maybe Zayin HaShekhinah Shorah Mitoch Atzvos, we were still sad and we were still unsure, so therefore there was a sense of sadness and the Shekhinah doesn't come back. Second Tosfos says, there would only have been 37 years of dying, because they didn't die in the first 2 years. And the way the Medrash that the Rashbam quotes says that there were 15,000 people a year that died. Tosfos says, by my calculation, if you knock out the last year and you knock out the first 2 years, there were only 37 years of people that died, and that would turn out to more than 16,000 people a year that died. So the Medrash seems inaccurate. Also, it would turn out that we had exactly the same number of babies each year in Mitzrayim, because as everyone was about to hit 60, that's when they died. It's just hard to imagine that the math actually worked out. And he said, and also they should have realized that everyone including the Gezerah was already dead. Why did they survive that last year? Because whoever was included in the original Gezerah was already gone. Shouldn't they have realized that everyone was already gone, and therefore of course they were going to all wake up? So Tosfos says a different pshat. Tosfos says, no, what the Gemara means is that of course they died during the last year, but the Shiva for the last of the dead ended on Tu B'Av. Meaning, so they sat Shiva, they all died on Tisha B'Av. Whoever was left to die died on Tisha B'Av, and they realized, okay, now Tisha B'Av is not going to be, every year is not going to be a time where we lose another 15,000 people. And when that Avelus was over, that was a cause for celebration, and that's what Tu B'Av is about, according to Tosfos. So that is the third highlight of Tu B'Av. The fourth thing about Tu B'Av, it's the day that they removed the guards that stopped people from going to Yerushalayim, which Yeravam had set up. Yeravam ben Nevat didn't want people to go to Yerushalayim, because they would see that Rechavam is from the Malchus Beis David, and only the people from the Malchus Beis David are allowed to sit in the Azara, Ein Yeshiva Ba'Azara El Malchus Beis David Bulvad, and they're going to see that Rechavam is allowed to sit in the Azara, Yeravam is not, and they're going to call into question his whole right to the throne. So Yeravam instead set up guards to make sure that no one goes to be able to regal to Yerushalayim. And he set up Eglei Hazav, where they have this alternative method of worship. So the day that those guards were taken away, that's the day of Tu B'Av. The Masha points out that that actually historically turned out to be a terribly tragic thing for Klal Yisrael. Because when those guards came, were taken down, you would expect the floodgates to open and everyone to stream toward Yerushalayim. That is, in fact, not what happened. Nobody went. And because nobody went, the Navi tells tells us in Sefer Melachim, nobody went to Yerushalayim, and because the Jewish people didn't go to Yerushalayim, we suffered terribly. We went into Galus. They led to the Galus because we didn't take advantage of the opportunity. So the Marsha simply writes, he asks that kasha, he says, V'yesh li ashev. Probably what he means is that even though it turned out to be terrible, it seemed like a great moment. You know, like it seemed like, ooh, now we have Yerushalayim back. So that was very exciting. Elamai, no one went, so that was a little less exciting that no one went. But at least at that moment, it was pregnant with potential. It was a moment that was full of potential. Now, the potential wasn't actualized; it wasn't realized. But that alone was a gift on Tu B'Av. The fifth thing that happened on Tu B'Av is Yom Shenitna Haruge Beitar Lekvura. The Rishonim are bothered why it is that we celebrate that. We were misaking the bracha of Atova Ametiv because the Aruge Beita were finally allowed to be buried. Why do we institute a bracha in benching about that? Why not a bracha in davening? So the Rishonim quote a medrash that they used the Melech used the Haruge Beita, piled up the bodies, and used it as a fence around his vineyard, around his kerem. So we associate the celebration of allowing the kvura of the Haruge Beita, the bodies are not decomposed, and allowing the kavura of the Aruge Beitar with Birchas HaMazon on the coast. So since Birchas HaMazon is associated with the coast, because the bodies were surrounding a kerem. The Ritva writes, no, we dafka want to do it in Birchas HaMazon, not in Tefillah, because we want to do it at a time of Simcha. And a person after eating is feeling a certain sense of Simcha, so that's why we want dafka the Bracha Vatov HaMetiv in that context. And then the final thing, the sixth thing that happened on Tu B'Av, Yom Sheposkim Bo Milichros Eitzim L'Ma'aracha. It was the day that they stopped chopping the wood for the Ma'aracha that they needed for the wood for the piles on the Mizbeach. And the Rashbam writes, from here you see that you're supposed to make a Simcha B'Gomro Shel Mitzvah. When you complete a Mitzvah, there should be a celebration. This is one of the primary sources for the Inyan of Siyum Masechta, that you make a Siyum when you complete a Limud, when you complete a Masechta, based on the fact that they made this simcha when they finished cutting the eitzim for the ma'aracha. Now, the great simcha was not that they finished cutting the eitzim. Now they had all of the eitzim, and therefore they were ready to actually use the eitzim. So that's where Salvation points out that the great celebration of a siyum is not the accomplishment in the past, it's that now we're really ready to understand all of our future learning much, much better. That's why the siyum we say, Hadron Alach, that we want, now we're ready to start again, and we're going to learn it so much better, because now we have some basic familiarity with all of the concepts and with all of the Masechta, so we're going to be able to go back and to learn it even stronger. That's why Reb Soloveitchik said that his grandfather, Reb Chaim, used to think that Chasen Torah was not the greatest kibbud. Chasen Bereshis was the greatest kibbud. Because Chasen Torah, okay, so you finish something. No, the great simcha of finishing something is that when you start again, you're going to be able to do it so much better. So that's the celebration of the finishing to be Koris Eitzim for the Atzei Ma'aracha. So what are the halachic implications of Tu B'Av? There happens to be a discussion as to whether an Avel should take an Amud, should daven for an Amud on Tu B'Av, whether it has a din of a Yontif in that regard. The Levush in Aruch Chaim Siman Tavkuf Pei writes, it's not really a Yontif, meaning it's just, you know, on a technical level, you know, you don't fast and you don't say Tachnun. So, you know, to that extent, it's a Yontif, meaning that's all it really is. Similar like a Lag Ba'Omer, you know, you just don't say Tachnun, so it's not, but it's not like a genuine Yontif. However, there are two additional possible things that aspects of the day that or of celebration of the day that may be relevant. One is that there's definitely a makar for increasing learning Torah belaila, dafka at night, starting Tu B'Av and going forward. The Gemara is one of the Gemara's explanations for Tu B'Av, as we mentioned, is that from Tu B'Av the power of the sun is diminished, and therefore they wouldn't cut any logs for the Ma'aracha anymore because the logs wouldn't be dried out enough, and they would start to get wormy. So they would dafka aim to finish cutting the Atzei Ma'aracha by Tu B'Av. But that was all a function of the fact that the sun loses some of its koach. The weather starts to change around Tu B'Av. So because you see the sun is losing its koach, that means nighttime takes on increased importance. And therefore, The Gemara says Rashi explained that you're supposed to increase the Talmud Torah that one has at night. And that's what Delo Yosef, the Gemara says, if you don't add to your Talmud Torah at night, then ultimately a person is going to be terminated for not adding to his Talmud Torah at night, dafka starting from Tu B'Av. So in fact, the Rama in Yoredeya, in Hilchas Talmud Torah, in Simen Resh Mem Vav, Si'if Chav Gimel, and it's quoted in the Mishnah Brura, in Simen Resh Lamed Ches, says that you should begin learning at the night from the 15th of Av, going on, and whoever doesn't increase will be terminated on some level. Okay, that is one hanhaga that relates to Tu B'Av. Now, what's the relationship between learning Torah during the long nights and the sun baking the wood? So the Rashbam explains that the idea, like we pointed out, that the idea of the finishing of the Atzei Me'aracha is that we're celebrating the completion of an important mitzvah, and as we pointed out, that's the inyan of a siyum. That's where a siyum comes from. So it makes a lot of sense that the way we're going to demonstrate that we value what happened on Tu B'Av is to learn more, to double down on our learning. In fact, Rabbeinu Gershom in Maseches Babasra interprets the Gemara a little bit differently, and he says that no, that it was much more direct. When they were busy cutting the Atzei Me'aracha, he didn't have much time to learn. But once they finished cutting the Atzei Me'aracha, so they were now free and they had more time to learn Torah, and that was the celebration. The celebration was that they were able to learn Torah. So one way we celebrate Tu B'Av is that we start learning a little more. It's ironic that the way yeshiva calendars work out is that Tu B'Av is always during Ben Hazmanim when nobody's learning. But really, that's one of the primary ways to celebrate Tu B'Av, to learn a little bit extra during the night. The other way that may or may not be a way to celebrate Tu B'Av is that it might be a worthwhile time to eat meat on the day of Tu B'Av. Where does that come from? So Magen Avraham has a comment in two different places where it's quoted by the Mishnah Berurah in both places. In Sim Tav Kuf Nun Aleph, he writes that if a community has a minhag not to eat meat or drink wine during Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, even after Tisha B'Av is over, and Tu B'Av falls out on the Friday after Tisha B'Av, even though it's Tu B'Av, don't even eat meat then, says the Magen Avraham. So the implication seems like that normally on Tu B'Av you would want to eat meat, it would be appropriate to eat meat, but if you have such a minhag that you don't eat meat on the Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, even after Tisha B'Av, that would incorporate Tu B'Av as well. And the other place, in Tav Kavayin Beis, he writes that once the Maharil made a gezeira that meat shouldn't be eaten on any Monday until Rosh Hashanah, Tu B'Av happened to fall on a Monday, and he wouldn't even be matir eating meat then. Again, the implication being that normally on Tu B'Av, you would think, since it's a day of celebration, a day of joy, that eating meat is particularly appropriate. Maybe that fits in very nicely with the idea of Tu B'Av being a siyum, like the Rashbam says. That what do we use a siyum for throughout the 9 days? We're making siyumim dafka to eat meat, because we assume that that's the proper way to celebrate a siyum, a sudas mitzvah. So on Tu B'Av, which is the basis of siyum, it may make sense to say that we should eat meat. Again, it's not a minhag quoted in the poskim, but it seems it's an indication of the joy that one is supposed to feel. In fact, Rav Moshe has a tshuva in our Chaim Chelek Aleph Siman Kufnun Zayin, where someone asked about a siyum. Can you make a siyum if people learn collectively? You divide up a masechta, everyone learns a blot or two, and then together you finish a masechta. You divide up a shas mishnayis. Can you make a siyum, and would that siyum be matir eating on for a bechar to eat on Erev Pesach, or for people to eat meat on during the 9 days? And Rav Moshe is making, he says it does work, and he says viaf shalomatzinu chiyuv mitzvah laso suda b'chamish asr ba'av, even though we don't find any chiyuv or mitzvah to make a suda on Tu B'Av, umistaver da'af bizmanam shegamu mamish ha-mitzvah nami lo asu suda, and even in the days when they were cutting the Atzei Me'aracha, we don't find that they actually made a suda, rak yom tov v'alma shelo l'lisanos, it was just stam a day that they didn't fast. But he says, but what you do see from the Atzei Me'aracha is there wasn't one guy cutting all the Atzei Me'aracha, everyone did a little bit, and still it became a yom tov, it became became a day of celebration. And that's the source of a siyum. So therefore he says it is a valid siyum if you have everybody contributing just a little bit to the process. So at the end of the day, there are six reasons why Tu B'Av is a happy day. What that means, it for sure means no tachnun, it for sure means no fasting. It seems to mean that one should increase Talmud Torah, particularly at nighttime, starting from Tu B'Av. And it seems to be that it's a worthy of celebration, and the way we typically celebrate is by eating delicious foods, by eating meat, but there's no halacha or even minhag explicitly that one should do so on Tu B'Av. Okay.